Hello and welcome to Car Talk on National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. And this week we're broadcasting from Car Talk Plaza. You know,
every week you come up with some phony place that we're broadcasting from.
Well, no, I mean, usually, I mean, this time of year we usually go away on our spring-winter vacation. But I got the feeling that listeners were getting a little disturbed that we were getting all these vacations, so...
You mean they believed us when we said we were, like...
Broadcasting from Waikiki Beach, you know, so I decided we should stay home because... Our listeners might think that, you know, I don't know this.
We're living
it up like Wayne Newton. Towel boy! Oh, I'm sorry. I just slipped out. I didn't mean to say that.
Well, it is true. Actually, one day someone said to me, oh, you're back already, huh? I said, back from where? She said, I heard you on the radio the other day broadcasting from Waikiki Beach.
Anyway, could you rub some suntan lotion on my shoulders?
Yeah,
I'm getting
sure.
A little burned here. I know you don't have any good mail to read.
I have some scientific stuff here, which is right up your alley, as a matter of fact.
Is it?
Well, here's a letter from... I can't believe sometimes what exists in the world. And it's as though... You know when they look for signals from other solar systems? They can give up. Because everything you could possibly ever think about...
Is right here on Earth.
Is right here.
Maybe even in our fair city.
Now... A few weeks ago, you expounded on your wacko roof snow theory, right?
Well, I didn't expound. I just gave a
little...
You
explained.
I just gave a very brief overview.
Well, you got a letter from... What's his name?
Me, personally? Dear Ray?
Well, it's no.
Oh.
It's to both of us.
I never get...
His name is Sam Kolbeck. I can't quite read it. He is from... Are you ready for this?
What?
Commission Internationale de Neige et Glace.
Ah.
The International Commission
of Snow and Ice.
Snow and Ice. And he says, imagine my delight to learn that you two have developed mathematical theories of snow friction.
Well, you're not reading it with the right accent.
Oh, I didn't.
Come on, will you? I teach him everything.
Well, I didn't have an accident today.
That's right. You don't have foreign accent syndrome.
Now, in addition to being my weekly entertainment, you are my true colleagues. Unfortunately, I did not catch the first few minutes of your broadcast. I was moving my snowblower to the basement where I could give it a carborectomy while listening to your wit and wisdom. However, I am sure you will enjoy reading the enclosed monograph on snow friction. And he encloses a review of the processes that control snow friction.
Let me see that. Let me see this.
Your roof snow theory, man, is right there.
Let me see this. Wait a minute. He's plagiarized my entire dissertation, this guy. Who is this guy?
But would you believe there was...
Thief! He's stolen all my ideas.
International Commission on Snow
and Ice. Great stuff, huh? If you have a question about your car...
I got one more little item here.
Oh, okay.
In addition to... Since we're on science, Dr. Robert Luthman from Staten Island sends in this from the Sunday newspaper, Laugh Parade... The scientist is sitting there in the lab telling another scientist, I'm developing a theory that space is curved. Either that or my car is pulling to the left.
Anyway, if you'd like to talk to us, our number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, it's Ben in Chicago.
Ben!
What's happening?
I have an 86 old Cutlass Sierra Cruiser, you know, the mid-size front-wheel drive wagon.
Yes.
Got an interesting shudder or shake in the front end on braking, and it's pretty exciting around 45 miles an hour or so.
Uh-huh.
So you're driving along at 45 miles an hour. Everything's hunky-dory.
Yep, perfect.
You hit the brake, mm-hmm. and you get a violent shaking of the whole front of the car.
In the steering wheel.
Exactly. It's not coming through the brake pedal, but it sure, you know, you can feel it in the steering wheel. Dashboard shakes, all the usual noises.
Yeah, well, it's often the case, and it has to do with the peculiar dynamics of the steering mechanism.
Okay.
It turns out that certain steering mechanisms of certain mass will cause the vibration of a warp disc to be telegraphed through the steering and not necessarily through the brake.
Okay.
Have you done a study of this?
Well, I have. I didn't want to blow my
own
horn.
Have you written a short monograph on this? Is it going to be published through the commission?
I'm not divulging any more of my monograms.
That's what that PhD stands for, huh?
No, it's very possible. I mean, of course, it is possible that there's something in the front end worn out, like a tie rod end. In a car this age, you could have a tie rod end or two or three.
Boy, that would have been what I would have thought about immediately.
Now, I've done the jack up the car and grab the tires to check for ball joints and tie rod ends. In other words, there's no vertical shake. If you grab top and 12 and 6 o'clock, you can't get any shake.
How about three and seven?
Three and seven. 3 and 9, I have no luck either. I can't. I do have a tie rod end that it's blown. It's greased. Gasket,
but there's
sure.
No, but there's no play in it.
Not even a little bit.
Have you done this before, or is this the first time you've ever done this?
Done what?
The front end check.
Checking the front end.
Oh, I've done it before on different cars. Never on a GM, and never a car with power steering.
But you have found bad front end parts your own.
Oh, the sob stories would go on for a
long
time.
So you are trying to test Ben's competence in this area.
Well, only because it's important, because the way you said you are testing for bad ball joints isn't necessarily the right way to test for
bad
ball joints. Right. And bad ball joints could cause exactly this problem, and the wheels could fall off.
Well, now that you got him scared, he's going to go right out.
So I'm just trying to make sure that you really know what you're doing, and I don't think you do, Benny.
Well, I think he does.
I don't think so.
And I'll tell you, I first ran into this many years ago on a Chevette. We had a Chevette that came into the shop, and it was doing exactly the same thing. And we were convinced it was something in the front end, and we replaced $4,000 or $5,000 worth of front end parts. And lo and behold, the problem was still there. That was tough to explain to the customer. We finally figured out that the warped discs were the culprit.
The brakes were replaced about 5 months ago, and worked no problem. This problem appeared maybe 2 or 3 months after the brakes were replaced.
Yes.
So I'm wondering if maybe I had a panic stop or something during the quote-unquote bedding in period.
Yes, the bedding in period. No, what probably happened during the bedding in period is one of the discs just warped.
Oh, okay.
We have this happen all the time.
Okay.
A lot of the discs are made in various countries throughout the world. And we have found over the years.
Yes.
That they warp for no reason whatsoever.
Okay.
And here's another test you can do.
Okay.
Get a piece of wood about 2 feet long.
Okay.
And the next time the brake pedal is pulsing. You just can't feel it through those platform shoes that you're wearing, those thick winter shoes. Take that stick and apply pressure to the pedal using the stick.
So you use your hand instead of the foot?
Use your hand instead of the foot.
Uh-huh.
And you will feel the pulsations coming through the pedal as well.
Cool.
And that will let you know that that's what the problem is. I guarantee
it. How about bare feet? Does that work?
Bare feet is good.
That's fine.
Are
I like
good.
That. Good.
Bare feet are good.
Bare feet are, especially on the sand.
Great.
See you, Ben. Thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Before we get off the subject of the roof snow theory, I had another quote here that applied to that, which I was going to discuss myself, and here it is. Someone sent it to us. We are all agreed. This is a quote. You tell me who said this to whom. We are all agreed that your theory is crazy. The question which divides us is whether it is crazy enough to have a chance of being correct. My own feeling is that it's not crazy enough.
Carl Sagan.
To Rush Limbaugh. Niels Bohr said it.
Ah, to Max Planck, Enrico Fermi, Albert Einstein.
Yeah.
No kidding.
Niels Bohr said it. And I think that if Niels Bohr were alive today, he would be talking about the roof snow theory in exactly these words.
You know, he was one of the greatest Danes ever.
He's a great Dane, I know.
1-888-CAR-TALK or 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
This is James from Tacoma Park, Maryland.
What's shaking?
Well, I don't actually have a problem. What I'm doing is I'm moving to Port-au-Prince, Haiti.
Oh, you poor guy.
Well, I'm going to work for the government.
Ah.
I'll probably be there for 2 years.
Yeah.
And when I was reading the report about living in Port-au-Prince, they said that you can't take public transportation. It's too dirty and too dangerous, and I'm not allowed. And that you should bring a car, but if you bring a car with high ground clearance.
Yeah.
So I have a 1990 Honda, and I just rebuilt the engine to the tune of about $2,000 about 3 or 4 months ago.
Yeah, well,
that's too bad, because that doesn't qualify as high ground clearance.
What I would like to know is...
Can you get a security clearance?
No, he wants to know, can he raise the ground clearance, right?
Yes.
You're nuts. What? Wait a minute. We can work on that.
Okay. What can they do?
You can't.
No, you really can't. I mean, there are, for certain vehicles, kits that allow you to to raise the clearance, but it would require so much. First of all, in order to do this, you'd have to put on much bigger tires.
Right.
Which would require that you take the fenders off.
Okay, I can do that.
But then they won't, they won't fit under the fenders.
Right.
So you'd have to raise up the whole suspension.
Okay.
So I would abandon the idea of taking the Honda.
Okay.
I would buy yourself a nice, cheap.
Did you say sheep?
No.
Cheap.
Or sheep.
Right. I'm going to Haiti where, I mean, I'm going to be protected, but, you know, my car is really, you know, they say that driving is very aggressive and all that sort of stuff.
You need a cheap pickup truck.
Right. Well, what has happened since I was running this idea past my family members, my sister said, well, we'll just take my car. So
yeah.
And it doesn't really make any difference what she drives because what do you care?
Yeah, exactly.
But well, does she have something with higher clearance, like a Forester?
She's got an old, like a 1985 Jeep, like a CJ5 or something.
Oh, that's man.
But mine has air conditioning. And she's only got a rag top. I mean, I got to, like, wear suits and stuff and have my hair look nice.
No, it won't.
No, you won't.
No. And more than that, you don't want to differentiate yourself from everyone else there by looking good and having your hair look good and be not being all sweaty because everyone else is sweating.
That's true.
Yeah, I mean,
you want to blend right in. You want to be one of the people.
That's true.
People don't wear suits where the weather is hot.
Well, they told me that when the invitation says informal wear, that means
pants optional.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Good luck.
All right, thank you.
Borrow your sister's Jeep. That's perfect.
Okay, thanks a lot.
And don't tip it over when you're down there.
Okay.
See you, James.
Bye-bye.
See you later.
1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
This is Wendy calling from Iowa City.
Hi, Wendy.
Hi there.
Iowa City.
I don't hold out too much hope for your solving this. It might be closer to being a puzzler.
Oh, really?
I've tried everything.
Oh, boy, we love a challenge
like
that.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I have an 88 Honda Prelude four-wheel steering car that I love and plan to drive forever.
Now, that was a feature that really caught on, huh?
Okay. Oh, yeah.
It's terrific. I love this car, except when my husband rides in it because he fogs it up. I mean, he fogs it up like mushroom soup on the inside of the windows or something.
Really?
Now, he doesn't do this in other cars.
He doesn't.
No, and nobody else does this in my car.
Wow.
Okay. Is he over 6 feet tall?
Oh, heavens no.
A little guy?
Oh, yeah. Well, short. And this, I can't tie it to a season.
Mm-hmm.
I've tried with and without the air conditioner on. I've tried the inside and outside intakes.
So you have it on fresh air?
Yeah, I've tried both. All combinations, all permutations.
Is there a chance that he's outgassing?
I tell you, I don't think it's diet related. I don't think it's breath related. He seems to have a pleasant breath.
And he fogs up all the windows?
Oh, it's a matter of minutes. Can't see a thing. You can wipe it off all day, it fogs right back up again. Doesn't happen in his car.
So it makes no difference whether he's driving or riding as a passenger?
He could be sitting in the back seat.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, his head isn't wet or anything. I mean, he's not just out of the shower when he gets into your car. I mean, that would do it, you know.
No.
So he could get in the middle of the day.
Oh, sure. Anytime, day, night.
Anytime. And how long does it take for the fog up to occur?
Oh, 5 minutes. It starts.
And then if you turn on the defroster?
Oh, yeah. You can.
That would take care of it, right?
Yeah, no. It does with other people.
Oh, it doesn't with him?
No.
It does not.
No, uh-uh.
This man is emitting some serious water vapor.
But only in my car?
Well, I think it's happening in your car because the Prelude is a relatively small vehicle.
Uh-huh.
And so if he is emitting large amounts of water vapor, it wouldn't happen in a vehicle which had a larger passenger compartment.
Okay, it doesn't happen in my son's Jetta.
Okay. Jetta's a little bigger than the
Prelude. Jetta's big. Big.
How about if you left the windows open? I mean, if you left a window open.
Well, we've tried cracking the windows. We tried opening the skylight a little bit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it helps a little?
No. Only that there's no fog where there's no window.
Yeah. You got to tell us more about him, then.
Here's the test.
Oh, gosh.
Well, here's the test. I mean, I don't know what it's going to tell you necessarily, but it's going to tell you something.
Uh-huh.
He needs a snorkel. You know the snorkels that you buy at the sporting goods store?
Excellent.
Yeah. And you need to have breathe
it
out the window.
Yeah, I like it, because we have to determine,
is
the source of the moisture in his lungs, or is it some other part of his body?
Okay.
I think it's in his garments.
After this phone call, my problem might be solved. He might refuse to ride with me.
No, I mean, if we eliminate his breath.
Okay.
That will open up all new possibilities. Then we can start talking about his clothing, his habits.
Okay.
And well, the next step would be he has to ride naked. But the first step is the snorkel.
Image.
Do the snorkel.
Okay.
Call us back.
Okay.
And then we'll give you the next step.
All right.
Call us back next week.
Okay.
All right.
We'll talk to you, Wendy.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, wow. It's time to visit the cobwebbed innards of your mind, Tony, to see if you remember last week's puzzler.
Well, I'm ready. Give me some hints, and I'll try to respond in the best way
possible. Here's the first one. When you were young and fleet of foot, you set all kinds of records in the 50-yard blank.
50-yard, 50, fleet of foot. The chamber pot carry.
No, I was looking for dash. The 50-yard dash.
50-yard dash. That
was here's
so
another one.
Simple.
Okay.
I should have known.
Whenever your teenage daughter hears our show, she screams, "Oh, my God, turn that off. I'm so blank."
I know that one. I'm so not related to him.
Good guess, but I was looking for bored.
Oh, bored.
The puzzle was about the dash. Oh, bored. And we'll be back with the answer in just a minute.
We're coming home from the show on a hot August night. The fireflies are winking and the half moon is bright. I roll down the window and I turn on some blues. I got a smile on my face because I'm wearing no shoes. I'm driving barefoot, barefoot. It's my favorite way to go. I'm driving barefoot, barefoot. It's the coolest thing I know. Well, they say it's illegal, but I think that's a myth, because your foot's the best thing to be driving with. Well, my right was for braking and my left's for the clutch, and I got to remember not to downshift too much, because it feels so real, I'm in touch with the road. Got it deep in my soul like a sensory overload. I'm driving barefoot, barefoot, it's my favorite way to go.
And even though Italian-Americans line up to change their last names to Wilcox whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from the American Jewish World Service, working together for more than 30 years to build a more just and equitable world. Learn more at ajws.org.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Hemmerke Schlemmer, a unique company that has been providing problem-solving products for 173 years, including the first car repair kit in 1902. Today, their lineup includes an automatic cordless tire inflator, widescreen rearview mirror, and a 1,000-amp jump starter, each chosen as the best by the Hemmerke Schlemmer Institute, their own independent testing organization. Find these and other items at Hemmerke.com. Use code NPRCAR to receive $20 off your order.
On NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour podcast, we talk about what we're watching, listening to, or just trying to figure out. Like what concert films you should watch if you miss live music. And great books to read, alone or in your book club. All of that in around 20 minutes every weekday. Listen now to the Pop Culture Happy Hour podcast from NPR.
Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and of course the answer to last week's puzzler. And this was sent in by a fellow named Bob Shea from somewhere in cyberspace. So if it's wrong, I'll give you his email address and you can send the hate mail directly to him. This puzzle is quasi-automotive, quasi-historical, and maybe quasi-bogus, but we don't know. Everyone knows that the panel in an airplane cockpit is called the instrument panel because it contains all the flight instruments, of course. You know,
yeah.
Got it. Well, a car also has instruments, but the panel that holds those instruments is not called an instrument panel. It's called the dashboard. And the question very simply is, where does the term dashboard come from?
Yeah.
Well, you had an idea that it would...
I thought it had something to do...
Dashing one's brains against the...
I did have that idea.
And I'm sure that's often been the case. You were pretty close. But Anyway, well, before there were cars, people used to get around using horses and buggies. And as you might imagine, the roads were dirt, and when it rained, the roads became muddy.
Mm.
You with me so far?
Yeah.
So if you were in a buggy and the horse was trotting along, the rear hooves would kick up mud. So carriages or wagons had a board that was affixed at an angle, not unlike the dashboards of cars.
Yeah.
And it was called the dashboard. In fact, if you remember Ward Bond leading the wagon trains across the plains.
They used to put their feet on this thing.
They used to put their feet on there. And when they started building cars, of course, they were really adapting carriages.
Sure.
Okay. So the thing that they attached the instruments in the car to, or the horseless wagon, was called the dashboard because it looked just like the dashboard of a wagon. And it was called the dashboard because it did its job primarily when the horses were kicking up mud when they were dashing. So horses...
Get out! Dashing and debonair or just dashing down the road?
Dashing through the snow.
Oh!
When the horses were dashing, that's when their hooves were throwing up the greatest amount of mud. And it just so happened that the thing in the car looked like the dashboard in a wagon. Oh, Tommy's making the face.
Oh,
he's making the
like
face.
It.
We're going to have some corroboration from the good people at the Smithsonian, I think.
The Smithsonian would be good.
Would you accept
because
that
it
as
sounds
sufficient authority?
I would have to say that this is on the bogus scale of 1 to 10, I'd say this is like a 7.
Which
that way.
Okay, never mind.
10 is bogus. And this is up there.
No.
A dashboard. There's so many other possibilities. The running board.
No, the running board's alongside.
Duh. Why not? Why? This is when the horses run.
That's next week's puzzle of the running board. Where did the running board come from?
Yeah, the running board. That'll be next week's puzzle.
I'm going to stake what's this guy's name?
Bob Shea.
Robert C. Shea.
Okay. We'll forward all the hate mail right to him. Send
his
it to my brother.
His reputation is on the line, but Bob, I'm with you.
Send it to ray@bogus.com.
I've done extensive research on this, which consisted of reading your email. And I concluded that you're right on, brother.
Well, I mean...
So do we have a winner?
Well, we do.
Oh, God, every week is getting...
Well, you gotta admit, it's a little bit stretching of something there. Come on.
I don't think so. Go ahead.
Well, Laurie Wiley agrees with you anyway. She's from Maple Shade, New Jersey, and she's our winner this week. And for having her answer selected at random from all the correct answers that we got, Laurie will get a $25 gift certificate to the Shameless Commerce Division at cartalk.com. With that gift certificate, she can get a copy of our not Grammy award-winning music CD, Car Talk Cartoons. Why didn't we win a Grammy? I thought we were going to pay off the judges.
Me? I thought you paid off the judges. Anyway, we'll have a brand new, I would say, cute little puzzler coming up in the third half of the show. So stay tuned for that. In the meantime, if you have a question about your car or anything else, feel free to call us at 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Art. I'm in Bozeman, Montana.
What's up, Art?
I have a nurture versus nature child development question for you.
Yes, well, nurture and nature are one of our specialties.
Okay, good.
R1. Yes. Notice that R1 is one of our specialties.
No, the subject of nurture versus nature.
Yes, I mean, we have gone into this in great depth for many, many years. So, tell me more.
And I have evolved a lot of theories about nurture versus nature, which I'll probably get a chance to talk about in the next minute.
Most of them involve a dope slap, as I remember. Yeah. So, Art, tell us about it.
I have a 1980 AMC Concorde with 186,000 miles on it that I'm considering giving to my 16-year-old son, but I'm afraid that giving him a car like this at this point in his life might make him crave things like 63 Dodge Dart Roof for the rest of his day.
Yeah, I see the dilemma here. Is that the real problem here, or is it that you don't want to part with this beauty?
He laughed.
He can't wait.
Even he knows.
Hey, this car is a good car, but it's buck ugly.
Isn't it buck ugly? It's true.
Well,
which leads me to ask the question: why were these cars purchased in the first place? What did they have that drew Of course, there weren't that many people that bought them, but the few people that bought these must have been attracted by something.
I know the answer to this.
Yes, because the promise of reliability.
As you may recall, my wife had one of these cars.
Yes, a 78, I believe.
She had a 78, which looked just like the 80. And the reason that people bought them in the first place was that, as ugly as they are, they were orders of magnitude better.
Less ugly. Not better.
Less ugly.
Less ugly.
Than their predecessors.
The Hornet.
The Hornet, the Pacer, all those cars that AMC had made throughout the 70s were, you talk ugly, that was ugly. However, I think the problem was that they didn't know how ugly they were.
But I would be cautious, Art, in giving this to you. This is a son you're giving it to?
Yes. Yeah, he's 16, and I'm afraid that he's going to be ostracized at school. He won't be able to get any dates.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, and it could therefore have repercussions to his sexual development, to all of his social skills.
But on the other hand, if you want him to learn to do something like play the cello, this is the perfect car to give him, because he'll have plenty of free time.
Or chess. Chess is good.
Does he play an instrument?
He plays the tuba.
The tuba, huh?
That's all right. That's good.
Are there any tuba virtuosos?
Virtuosi. I don't know. Well, this is an interesting question, Art. I would be in favor of giving him.
I'm going to go for it.
I'm going to go for it, too.
The tuba virtuosity. I mean, I don't know of any.
We're talking about AMC
Oh, forget that. I mean, I think it's important. I mean, you hear of violin, cello virtuosos, but you don't hear of tuba virtuosos.
You don't. So he has an opportunity to be the first one.
Well, I'm going to go for it myself,
You'll be the first
one. If Art's son doesn't go for it.
See, I would give him the Concorde because I think probably it will make him more aware of...
I don't even need the instrument.
I was just wondering, was Tommy's first car something like this?
Gee, my first car...
The first car that Tommy owned.
Yeah.
Go
ahead, do you know?
Was it a really ugly heap?
God, it was so ugly.
You could say, Art, that without exception, every car he's owned,
except for
the sleek black beauty, which he's not allowed to say on public radio anymore, except for that, has been an ugly car.
And that's not true, but the first one most certainly was an ugly car. My first car was a 1953 Dodge Coronet.
No.
Oh, no. That other funny
51.
Name.
No, 53 Meadowbrook.
Meadowbrook.
With that ugly green.
It
Boy, was
the
was
most
that...
ugly. If you want to see ugly, this is sort of like a car that would be bought either by the government, the army.
Yeah, it was worse than army green, if you can imagine that.
It was the worst. The ugly, but it was cheap. It was cheap.
And that has always been his guiding principle.
Yeah.
That has always been his guiding principle. So he's always
God,
had ugly
it was
cars.
Ugly.
So you are, and now come to think of it, Dad's always had ugly cars, too. Boy, I'm glad that I didn't inherit that character trait.
No, that
from
Dodge
Dad.
Dakota you got. That's really awesome.
What are you talking about?
Well, if your son, what's his name, Art?
My son's name?
Yeah.
Is Sean.
Sean. If Sean drives around in this Concorde for a year or so, he will develop a sense of what beauty really is, because he'll know that this isn't it.
No, he'll probably develop some kind of inferiority complex. I would keep him away from this thing at all costs. Send this car right to the crusher, don't let him near it, and buy him a Camaro. He'll love you. Thanks for your call, Art.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
He'll have a lot more fun with a Camaro. He really will.
Yeah, but you don't want him to have fun. He's at an age where he's got to be working. He's got to do his homework. He's not supposed to be driving around in a Camaro.
Oh, he's got plenty of time to do his homework when he's... Reform school. 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
This is Lisa calling from Doylestown, Pennsylvania.
Doylestown.
Yes.
So what's up today, Lisa?
Well, I have an 82 Nissan Maxima diesel.
Oh, what a beast. What a wonderful car.
Really?
Hey, I got it for $800 with 42,000 original miles on it. A couple
really?
Years ago, and it's driven like a charm. I really have no problem with it until now.
It's actually a nice car.
Yeah.
Except for the diesel, but
the diesel part, right? The Maxima is a nice car. This is a rear wheel drive Maxima.
Yeah.
82.
But the problem now is, we put a rebuilt starter in about a year ago.
Uh huh.
I'm trying to remember back before that why we put in a new starter. We must have had a problem. That I don't recall, but we have. since that new starter's been put in, slowly but surely, we've gotten a worse and worse sound when we go to start the engine.
Mm. Is this an automatic transmission?
It's a stick.
Okay. Well, give us the sound.
The sound is like, well, I'll tell you, it sounds just like the car's already on.
Oh.
So this is what it does. It goes... And then, yeah. So you just do that once, let it go, and start it, and it starts right up.
Good.
Now, problem is, as it gets colder, it makes a louder and louder sound, and it takes more tries to start it up. As it gets warmer, it almost goes away.
Uh-huh.
And the more, like, if I do errands, the first time you start it in the morning always does it, but by the third time I've started it in the day, it doesn't do it at all.
And you've had one starter put in?
A year ago,
and it was a rebuilt. And then about 4 months ago, I took it to our local mechanic here. He took the starter apart and said, there is nothing wrong with the starter. And he also said if it was his car, he wouldn't replace it. He said it's not hurting anything. It's just having a hard time engaging, it sounded like.
No, it is hurting something.
I don't like that advice.
However, I think the thing it's hurting is already hurt. In fact, the thing that's wrong is doing the hurting. And what I think is wrong is that your flywheel has some chewed up teeth. The starter has a little gear on the end of it called a pinion gear.
Yeah.
And when you turn the key, the action of the solenoid thrusts that gear, in this case, towards the back of the car, uh-huh. whence it engages what's called the ring gear on the flywheel.
Yeah.
And
which is attached to the engine.
Okay.
Right, which is bolted to the crankshaft of the engine. So as the starter pinion gear turns, it turns this big gear on the flywheel, the pistons go up and down, and if it's above 35 degrees with a diesel, the engine starts. Okay? But somewhere along the line, you have some chipped teeth. And every once in a while, the flywheel is stopping such that some of those chipped teeth happen to be right in line with this gear on the starter. So when you turn the key to start the thing, you hit these bad teeth and it goes...
Yeah.
And then other times, it starts up perfectly okay.
Except it always starts badly in the cold. Always. Without question.
There goes that theory.
No.
As my brother was giving his erudite explanation, I kept saying to myself, how is he going to explain the cold?
I was hoping that Lisa hadn't. I was hoping that she'd be
and
so
I too,
enthralled.
Being your brother.
So overwhelmed.
I actually said, if Lisa doesn't notice, I'm not going to mention it.
Well, I appreciate your support in this matter.
But Lisa ain't no dummy.
My mama didn't raise no fools.
Mommy didn't raise no fools. And
our mother did.
I said to myself, how is he going to explain what happens to these teeth when it gets warm?
Yeah.
These teeth magically grow back?
No, Tommy.
Luckily,
everyone knows that things expand when they're warm. So if you had teeth that were barely meshing.
Oh, come on.
Of course. I mean, it could account for the diameter of that flywheel could change by in warmer weather by as much as an eighth to a quarter of an inch.
Yeah, but that would mean that every time it's cold, the bad teeth happen to be right there.
All the teeth are bad.
Ah!
Call Pons and Fleischman. Maybe they can help me with this. There's a way out of this. I don't have it on the tip of my tongue.
I hate to disagree.
I am just using, I know you're going to disagree, and I'll give you ample opportunity for your views.
Yeah.
For opposing views. The only thing I have in my defense...
Yeah.
Well, I'm trying to think. is that we replace not diesels. We don't do any diesel. In fact, I've never even laid my hands on a diesel Maximum. But we do replace a fair number of flywheels in Nissans, in Hondas, Toyotas. We do see a fair number of them chewed up. Nissans, among of the Japanese cars, being the ones that have the worst flywheels.
Okay.
So I'm just using my vast experience.
Even though it doesn't make sense.
Even though it doesn't make sense, always go on experience.
I like that. Well, however, I would like to submit an opposing view.
Good.
And it is this. And it explains, I think, why it happens the way it happens and the fact that it happened gradually. I think there is something wrong with the starter. I think the solenoid is not kicking in far enough sometimes. And so what's happening is the gears are not meshing because the gears aren't from the starter are not coming out far enough. That would explain why it happened a little bit at a time. It's getting worse and worse and
also,
worse.
Also, the starter gear is not forthcoming.
Exactly. It is not coming forth or forthcoming. And you can test this easily enough, too, by putting in a new starter.
Right.
And I bet you that if you put in a new starter, the problem will be solved. Of course, I would first do what my brother suggested. Have the mechanic take a look at the pinion gear teeth. And if he doesn't see that they're all chewed up, ask him to put a new starter in, and I'll bet you the problem goes away.
Oh, you guys are just so great.
Oh, aren't we? Thanks, Lisa.
Thanks a million.
See you later.
Love your show.
Thanks.
Thanks
bye
for calling.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey, it's time for us to take a short break because we've been working hard.
Good. I have to go check out my office. I hired a cleaning crew to give it a once-over, you know, a little spring cleaning.
Good idea. They're going to do the rug?
Oh, yeah. They're going to torch everything.
Good. We'll be back with a brand new puzzler and more of your calls in just a minute.
A broken motor's all I got. I turn the key at 7 on the dot. In the morning, night and night, everything will be all right. Everything will be all right. I turn down Highway 1. Me and my baby going to have a little fun. In the morning, night and night, everything will be all right. Everything will be all right.
And even though jurors everywhere beg to be sequestered whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR.
This message comes from NPR and Car Talk sponsor CarMax. Finding the right car takes time, and with the new Love Your Car guarantee from CarMax, you can take your time to make sure you found the perfect car for you. Starting with a 24-hour test drive. Drive it to work, school, and the grocery store before you buy, and if it feels right, you've got a full month and 1,500 miles to keep on driving with their new 30-day money-back guarantee. Learn more at the new Love Your Car guarantee from CarMax at CarMax.com.
On NPR's Consider This podcast, we don't just catch you up on the news. We help you make sense of what's happening, whether it's how to tackle the challenges that come with pregnancy during a pandemic or how to understand the crisis unfolding along our southern border. We'll fill you in for 15 minutes every weekday. Listen now to Consider This from NPR.
Ah, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Collect, the Tapper Brothers. And we're here to discuss cars, car repair, and the new puzzle.
We are on top of things, you know?
I've lately taken to reading some of my old mail.
I can see that.
And this puzzle suggestion came from a guy named Benjamin Schultz, who looked like he was probably a high school student or maybe an elementary school student.
Probably got four kids now. He's driving a minivan.
Now, first of all, I should mention that this is the first in a series of World War One puzzlers.
World War One. You have all these little series. Like
yes.
Gus.
Yes.
And Krusty.
Yeah.
String.
String. Pendula.
Pendula.
Matchsticks.
Oh, yeah, the matchsticks. The famous matchsticks.
Oh, yeah.
Whoa, that was great.
This is just the first in the series of World War One puzzles.
World War One. Okay.
And here it is. At the beginning of the First World War, the uniform of the British soldiers included a brown cloth cap. They were not provided with metal helmets. What were they thinking? As the war went on, the army authorities and the war office became alarmed at the high proportion of men suffering head injuries.
Yeah.
They therefore decided to replace the cloth headgear with metal helmets. From then on, all soldiers wore the metal helmets.
Good idea.
However, you ready for this?
Yeah.
The War Office was amazed to discover that there were more soldiers hospitalized with head injuries than ever before. It can be assumed that the intensity of fighting was the same before and after the change.
Yeah.
So why should the recorded number of head injuries, why should the number of soldiers hospitalized for head injuries per battalion increase when the men were wearing metal helmets
instead of cloth caps?
Now, if you think you know the answer, send that answer to Puzzler Tower, Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our fair city.
Matt 02238, or you can email your answer from cartalk.com. And thank you, Benjamin Schultz. If we caught you, we can give you a graduation present or something.
Oh, yeah, he might have just gotten out of college.
Exactly.
A lot of things.
Exactly. So we don't know. We don't know where Ben is.
We don't.
We'd like to find out.
I'd like to know. Give us a call, Ben.
1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 1-888-227-8255. 8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
What's going on, fellas?
Hey.
This is Troy from Seattle.
Troy, baby.
¿Qué pasa?
Well, I have this problem, and it's satanic in a matter of speaking.
Well, I have the Holy Spirit, so I will be able to deal with Satan.
My brother can handle this.
Well, you guys are my last resort.
Okay.
I've got an 88 VW Fox, and that's almost enough said by itself, but no comments, please, from the people.
No.
Yeah. That was not Volkswagen's finest hour.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't. But it's one of its cheapest hours. That was
it was a very cheap hour, yes.
Recently, it started making satanic noises, and I've kind of opened the hood and looked in there. But the problem is the noise doesn't make... or the noise doesn't kick in until around like about a 1500 RPM. Problem is, it doesn't stay in, it doesn't continue making noises above 3500 RPM.
So this is a noise that's under the hood.
It's under the hood.
You can hear it with the engine running, but the car not moving.
It will not make the noise in idle, and it will not make it above 3500 RPM. But anywhere in between there, you will hear a high-pitched whine.
I'm going to make the noise for you.
What's that?
Yeah. Can I make the noise?
You may.
That's satanic.
That's definitely satanic. That's a close, yeah, real close.
Real close.
Yeah.
One other thing, I don't know.
I've heard that noise a lot in foxes. I've never figured out what it is.
Uh-oh.
No, I think I have an idea, but go ahead.
It will also change pitch depending on how fast I'm going when the car is moving.
Now, have you studied this noise enough? I mean, you can open the hood and you can rev the engine. You realize that. You can grab a hold of the throttle. Have you done that?
No, actually, I haven't.
Well, you could do that, and you could actually put the thing in neutral, you know, the handbrake set, and the engine running, and you can work the throttle from under the hood. You'll see the cable running to it from the gas pedal.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can't figure out what it is, have someone step on the gas pedal and watch what moves, and you can move that thing with your hand.
Okay.
And you can make the RPMs go up to the point where you can hear the noise.
Okay.
At which point you can go around and listen to things and see if you can figure out what it is. I mean, the first thing that comes to mind, obviously, is a bad alternator or a bad water pump. Either one of those things will make noise, the noise you describe, and make it worse at higher speeds. And at some point, the noise might go away for whatever reason. I don't know.
Sometimes it does. And depending on how cold the car is, it will... make the noise more frequently, but it's a little embarrassing. I'm driving down the street, I feel like, you know, I'm in shaft or something with this my own theme music as I'm going along. People
I am going to suggest from my vast experience with Volkswagen Foxes.
Yeah.
All right, what do you guys suggest?
I'm going to suggest that it is your timing belt tensioner.
Well, I forgot to mention, this is key. I had the timing belt... It's one of those things you leave out. I had the timing belt changed, and the noise started shortly thereafter.
Ah, good.
Like I mentioned before, it's not belt noise. We all know what belt noise is.
It isn't
like
belt noise, not, and no. I'll tell you exactly why it's making the noise. They tension the timing belt too much.
Okay.
Unlike a lot of, what's the term? Civilized cars.
Real cars. Real
that have an automatic tensioner.
Okay.
The Volkswagen relies on the expertise of the technician to tension the belt properly. And what there is a tensioner that's mounted on a shaft, but it's off-center. So as you rotate this thing, you can make the belt tighter and tighter and tighter, but you have to know when to stop.
Okay.
And if, in fact, you had the belt replaced and the noise appeared after that, it's almost a certainty that they set the tensioner too tight, and sometimes just backing off on it will make the noise go away. But I would recommend changing the tensioner. I think it costs like $50 or so for the part. Or maybe less.
Well, this isn't going to set the car on fire in the meanwhile.
Oh, yeah, it will. No. No, it won't set the car on fire, but it might break the belt.
Okay, well, that's not any good either.
If the tensioner has been set too tight and is making noise now, the bearings in it are probably burned up a little bit, so I would replace it.
Okay.
So I would go back to them, because I think with almost 100% certainty.
Oof! This is good. Yeah,
that's
I like
it. Bold statement, gentlemen.
I like it.
Good luck, Troy.
Thank you very much.
See you later.
So long. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Hey, can I read a letter?
Do whatever you want.
All right, here's one from a guy named Rick Up, and I don't know where he's from, because you can't tell when people send you email where they're from.
Wait, guess.
I was excited to find out this week that it's going to cost a fortune to have my car engine rebuilt. Notice that I was excited to find out this week. That's because I know that the words too expensive actually mean you have to do it yourself. I'm not after some altruistic feeling of accomplishment, nor do I look forward to the pride I'll feel for having saved $1,000 on a major car repair by doing it myself. No, none of those things. I'm after the tools.
Right. There you go.
If I rebuild a motor, I'll be able to, no, I'll have to buy a bunch of really cool tools. Like most guys, I suffer from the following major guy tendency, number three. I fixate on a single tool, the perfect tool, as though owning that one item will fulfill all my needs.
Mm.
However, I have learned that some people, whom we shall refer to as my wife, cannot appreciate the innate beauty of the perfect tool. So before I can buy the perfect tool, I usually need an excuse. Rebuilding the engine in the car would provide justification for about a dozen perfect tools, tools that might get used this once and never again. But who cares? They are cool tools. And that's it. See, if you have a big project,
oh yeah,
you can buy anything. My brother-in-law is like that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's carried it to an extreme. Yes. I mean, I convinced my wife wanted me to make her a step stool so she could reach the stuff on the top shelf in the cupboards. And I had to go out and buy a table saw, a jointer planer, a radial arm saw, lathe, drill press.
Well, I was thinking of Eugene.
Eugene, on the other hand.
See, now, Eugene, my brother-in-law, he somehow, I mean, his wife always wants to know, Eugene, well, why do we actually need that? You know, why? I mean, like, how about if we had, like, a bathroom? Wouldn't that be nice to have, too?
Instead of a backhoe. any man that can own a backhoe.
He convinced his wife that they needed a backhoe more than they needed a bathroom.
Moreover, convinced her that they should park it on the front lawn. I mean,
now there's a man after my own heart.
What a genius. A true genius.
The guy's a genius.
Yeah, I mean, Steinmetz didn't have anything on Eugene. 1-888-CAR-TALK. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Mary Rawson from Santa Barbara.
Hi, Mary.
Hi, Mary?
Actually, it's Mary Rawson. It's a double first name. That's my first
name. Mary Rawson.
Right.
How do you spell Rawson?
Rawson.
What the hell? Who did this to you?
Come on, help us out.
Well, I'm really from Atlanta, Georgia.
Yeah.
And my parents named me after my grandmother, but she was called Mary, and they didn't want me to be the little Mary in the family.
Yeah.
So, you know, they said I'd be the last child in the world with a double first name. So here I am.
Oh, so what do you have? You have a nickname? Could we call you Mimi or something?
No.
Mary
no,
Rawson.
No, everybody is tortured and has to call me Mary Rawson.
So you're, all right,
all
M-
right,
M- all right,
Mary
M-
Rawson,
R-
if that's how you're going to be, then we'll stick with it because it's your name and you can do whatever you want with it.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Well, I have a 1996 850 Volvo sedan.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had noise with the, like a throbbing noise. And so I kept taking it to the dealer and saying, I think there's something wrong with the brakes. And they said, yeah, your rotors are dished out here. And
yeah.
They showed me. And I took a friend with me. And this is my friend, a good friend of mine. He's a guy. So after they looked at it and they said, well, you definitely should replace your front rotors. So my friend says, you know, don't worry about this. Order the parts and I'll do the brake job. I have done it on two Hondas and a Fiat, and it's not a big deal. We'll just buy the manual and whatever. So I'm like, well, I'm in graduate school. I'd like to save some money. So my question to you is,
how long will my car be up on blocks?
But meanwhile, I ordered the parts from this internet Volvo dealer who claims to have totally real Volvo parts.
Well, you'll know if they come in the blue boxes that say Volvo on them.
Right. So my main question is,
should you trust this guy?
Right.
How long you been going out with him?
But he's not my boyfriend. He's just a friend.
Oh, does he want to be your boyfriend?
Yes, he does.
He does, huh? Is he cute?
He's a great guy.
How much he's looking. In other words, there's not a chance in hell.
He's goofy looking, huh?
He knows that I'm, you know, he knows we're just friends.
He knows you're just friends, but he doesn't like it.
But he's willing to do my break.
He's willing to be your friend.
And you are.
Dream on, baby.
You are an evil person.
I'm not evil.
Well, you're about to be. Oh, Mary Rawson. So you want to lead this guy on just enough.
I think it's called exploitation.
No. No, I can't say more, but I've been really nice to this guy. I don't want to get in trouble with certain other people involved, but
like your boyfriends.
No. Anyway.
All right.
I can't say anything else. It involves my living situation.
So you're more concerned then about his competence.
Well, I mean, he says it's a really easy job.
It is.
And I said, but he's only done it on these, like, you know, his Hondas.
It's the same job. If he's done it on a Honda.
Uh-huh.
So what's, is he going to just replace the rotors?
Yeah, he's going to replace the rotors, and I ordered pads.
And the pads.
Yeah, he said if as long as we're replacing the rotors, we might as well do the pads.
Oh, yeah, he's absolutely right about that. So right away, that tells me that he knows.
He knows something.
He does know something.
And they are pretty much all alike, and it ain't rocket science.
Right. It doesn't. I mean, I looked at it. It doesn't seem like rocket science to me.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, women have been doing this since the beginning of time, so there's no reason
for us to try to change it now. Is that what you're going to say?
Yeah. I mean, who are
and
we?
You're right.
Who are we to interfere?
We're not going to change it. We don't know who did it. But when I get my hands on them.
Yeah. We don't know who that first guy was, but.
Yeah.
Yeah, God.
No, I mean, as long as you don't feel as though you're exploiting your relationship with this guy.
No, I don't.
And you don't want to discuss it any further, and I can understand that. I understand that.
But he knows that there's no likely future in a relationship with you, is that
right? No, but I mean.
But besides, how's he going to know that it's you when he hears the show? Because, I mean, there are lots of Mary Rawsons in the world. There's you.
No, what I don't want to discuss is that I've been really kind to this guy. He's from Vancouver, and he commutes down to Santa Barbara.
He's a real nerd, huh?
No, he's a jeweler. He's a very talented jeweler, and he's not a nerd. But because of other situations involved, I can't say it because if somebody else listens to this show, I could get in trouble.
Yeah.
Oh, now you're worried about that.
No, not other men like that. Person who
we don't,
has
Mary Rawson, I understand. You don't have to go any further because
no, I'm not sure
it.
I get it.
I'll explain it to you later. I will explain it to him later.
All right. Well, anyway, I get it. You do what you think is best. But just to put your mind at ease, if he's done a brake job on a Honda, it's really not much. There will be no surprises in doing the brake job on this Volvo. It's very straightforward.
All right, well, I love you guys, and I really appreciate you taking my call.
Mary
Good
Rawson,
luck.
It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Bye-bye.
All right. Well, it's happened again. You've trashed another perfectly good hour listening to Car Talk. Our
really?
Esteemed producer is Doug the Subway Fugitive, not a slave to fashion, Bongo Boy Frogman Berman. Our associate producers are David the Calves of Belleville Green and Catherine Frau Blucher Fenelosa. Our web lackey is Doug the Old Gray Mayor, assisted by Connie Bridgeford. Our theme music is by David Dog Grisman, and our technical, spiritual, and menu advisor, just back from the Calumet, Alouette, Stale Baguette, Vinaigrette, Crepe Suzette, and Tagamet Food Vet, is John Bugsy Lawler. Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Margin of Error. Our customer care representative is Heywood Jabuzoff. Our personal makeup artist is Bud Tugley. Our personal hygiene advisor from the Tokyo office is Otake Oshawa. Our rock and roll historian is Bruce Wade Hughes. The head of our working mother support group is Erasmus B. Dragon. Our mother-in-law liaison is Stella Payne Diaz. Our Russian chauffeur is Pekoff and Dropoff. And our staff tailor is you, Jess. Our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe is you, Louis Dewey, known to the shivering songbirds in Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey. Thanks. Thanks so much for
you
listening.
You liked her, didn't you?
We're Click and Clack the Tappan Brothers. And remember, don't drive like my brother.
And remember, don't drive like my brother.
We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. Erasmus B. Dread. You can get a podcast of this show, subscribe to our weekly podcast, and check out our migraine-inducing clothing and best-of collections all over at cartalk.com. Also this week at cartalk.com, what to do with your old heap when you buy a new car.
You could crush it just for the emotional satisfaction that revenge brings on, but why not rise above that and donate it to benefit your favorite public radio station? This one.
It's extremely easy with the Car Talk Vehicle Donation Program.
Details are on the website at cartalk.com. Car Talk is a production of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though Chicken Little says, okay, now do you believe me? Whenever we say it, this is NPR.